know what's going to happen. We'll just have to see, but it'll all play out in the next couple of weeks, as June 30th is the deadline for passing a new transportation bill.
Lisa Evans is Senior Administrative Counsel at Earth Justice. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, June 13th, 2012. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago and Linda Perry. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
And this is WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 megahertz FM, and possibly for you, streaming at WBAI.org. My name is Robert Knight, welcoming you to tonight's edition of Earthwatch, and what a week has it been. The program has been preceded yesterday with a very special event here at WBAI, one of great creativity. On the program Ecologic with Ken Gale, where there was an unorthodox public performance in conjunction with the unique abilities of terrestrial broadcast radio to simultaneously communicate with people in the street and throughout the city, as well as with people in the audience. We're going to maybe talk about that just a little bit tonight, and how such potentials at such a great radio station can be used to mobilize more than we thought possible before. So please stay tuned for all of that and more tonight on Earthwatch, in which we'll be looking at many things. So do stay tuned. Coming up is the program Earthwatch. My name is Robert Knight, and thank you for listening.
The bell for freedom still rings. The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it ring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. The beating sound of the hammer for justice that pounds. When the world, stop and listen. When will we all stop and see? As he looks upon us with a frown, to know that millions of babies still starve. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. Someone still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent one still die. stop and see. As he looks upon us with a frown. Light of truth we won't let shine. Light of truth we won't let shine. Tell me, has the world gone blind? Light of truth we won't let shine. As long as there's life, there's still a day. As long as there's life, there's still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
And this is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, 99.5 megahertz FM, and streaming at stream.wbai.org. My name is Robert Knight. And more than about Earthwatch tonight, I want to celebrate a very wonderful event that took place barely over 24 hours ago with a colleague, Ken Gale, and the crew with the program Ecologic, in which there was an international, an interprogrammatic, and a cross-constituency experiment in broadcast radio that brought together people from many places in regard to environmental hazards, nuclear dangers, and many other things. Welcome to Earthwatch, Ken Gale.
Hey, Robert. How you doing? Glad to be here.
Well, Ecologic did something fresh last night. Why don't you just tell us about it?
We had a rally, a no-nukes rally. And it was, instead of the speakers and music being on a stage somewhere, they were here at WBAI. And so the people on the rally brought the speakers and the music with them as they marched. And it was completely a joint event of people marching and people playing the radio.
In effect, it was taking the radio to the streets.
It was. It absolutely was. And I want to give total credit to it must be late.
To everybody who was there.
Yeah, but particularly Yuko Tonohira for thinking of it in the first place. It was her idea. And without Yuko, it wouldn't have happened. And I understand that WBAI did this sort of thing during the Vietnam War days, which some people call the golden age of BAI.
This would be the platinum age.
And, this young woman, just thought of doing it now without realizing that BAI had done it, 40-some years ago.
Well, Ecologic is a program ostensibly about ecology, the environment, and the preservation of the safety of human life being consumed in a dangerous surrounding. But just tell us a bit about what the concept of your show is, and then we'll get back to what you did with it last night.
It's a show about environmental activism and environmental education. And I interpret an environmental show very, very broadly. And so I include, the obvious things of air, water, wildlife. But I talk about energy issues and environmental justice and healthy food and green buildings and transportation and things like that. And I try to have a scientist and a activist on each show so that you can trust the information you get. But you're not sitting there going, now that I know that, what do I do? And I've been doing this show for almost exactly 10 years, just slightly more than 10 years.
What about the nuclear issue?
Well, I'm the author of Chernobyl on the Hudson. came out, right after Chernobyl happened in 1986. And again, I didn't do that alone. I had the help of people from the Shad Alliance, helping me, sort of put it together and things like that. But when nuclear power stopped being a sexy issue in 1982, I still continued to research, and I still continued to go to what conferences and things that were still being put on, continuing to follow what the Nuclear Information Resource Service was doing in Washington. So I was ready when Chernobyl happened, and I had all this information. And I went to a meeting of the fledgling New York Greens and said, all right, I have all this stuff. And I pulled out this folded paper full of my research and said, I want help choosing what to put in a flyer and what not to. And they were unanimous to say, no, it's not going to be a flyer. It's going to be an entire booklet. And I've been active on nuclear power issues for a long, long time. Pretty much when I realized that the nuclear utilities have been lying to me for years and years and years. As I was pro-nuclear once, I thought...
Get out of here, Ken. Yeah. Gale. Tell me... Wait, before you tell the rest of the story, I've got to hear this part.
Well, I bought into this fiction that being pro-science meant being pro-nuclear. And I'm not even sure how I got that, but I grew up in Jersey, and Jersey Central Power and Light would send their representatives to school and tell us how great the Oyster Creek nuclear plant was and how great nuclear power was. And they'd set up these paper tiger arguments. And then when I started talking to real anti-nuclear activists and finding out that there are all these little details like nuclear waste and routine emissions that they never talked about, I changed my point of view and trying to make up for lost time, as it were.
And so now, here we have a situation in Fukushima that, by any rational measure, is an even greater global exposure to the environment of carcinogenic radiation. That is an unprecedented spillage of such materials into the Pacific Ocean. Already we're getting even delayed peer-reviewed science journal reports of hot tuna transiting the Pacific to the western shores of North America. And yet the conventional coverage of that subject seems to be lacking in the corporate media. So tell me how you came with the very special broadcast yesterday evening between 8 and 9 o'clock when Ecologic is on, to thematize on that subject.
Well, when Fukushima happened, it catalyzed a lot of environmental activism on nuclear power issues and on renewable energy issues as well. And the Shut Down Indian Point Now group started in New York City. When 9/11 happened, IPSEC, the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition in Westchester, got catalyzed and became greater than ever. It didn't quite happen in New York City. It took Fukushima to galvanize New York City. And, of course, a lot of Japanese Americans and Japanese immigrants are active on this topic. And I met Minoru Nakamura probably at Occupy Wall Street meeting, because she goes to a lot of those. And she's an amazing, amazing woman, an incredible activist. And she invited me to some of the meetings that her group was having after I had her on Ecologic having to do with Fukushima. And they came up with this radio rally. And I'm sitting there. I was one of the many people who helped organize the June 12th march in 1982. 1.2 million people beyond anybody's dreams. All those people marching for nuclear disarmament. And they're talking about, doing this. And it's like, well, it needs to be in June because that's when the daylight lasts longest, because of the solstice. my show is on the 12th and the 26th, and they picked the 12th. And I'm like, do you know the significance of the 12th? Because, you know, these are mostly in their 20s, so they weren't alive 30 years ago. And so I told them, and they go, well, then we have to do it on that date. And we started putting things together.
And? What was that thing that you put together? Let me advance the plot a little bit, because I had some small role in it, to my great honor and appreciation for your courtesy, as the field correspondent of the walk through the village in unexpected ways, sing-along. And Ken, this is what I think was brilliant. And that is using terrestrial broadcast. I don't give a damn about what everybody says about, well, we've got to be on the internet, you know, because like all the kids today with the smartphones, blah, 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 blah. This is old folks talking about stuff they don't really understand. Because there is a unique quality to broadcast radio that is ubiquitous and untrackable. So now can you speak about the concept of the sing-along?
Well, the Raising Grannies were a natural to invite onto the show as for the live music part. And their whole thing is to do a sing-along. It's just what they do. They hand out song sheets at every event. They sing at dozens of rallies and conferences and all different events all through the year. And they hand out song sheets, and they want the audience to sing along with them. And they have wonderful lyrics. It's just a lot of fun to sing along. And of course, people who don't like their parents like their grandparents. I mean, there's just something magical about grandparents. And the Raising Grannies throw all the cliches about old people, you know, on their rear. And they made 100 song sheets for people to give out. Of course, I don't think they did get given out because of the rain.
Well, actually, I was there.
Yes,
Ken.
You were.
And I did see the song sheets. And of the people who majestically proceeded through the lower part of Manhattan from the historic Tompkins Square Park, the scene of many a riot, and through the streets, sometimes in the middle of the street. And it was interesting because the police presence seemed to be, pardon the expression, flat-footed, because it took a while for the response to catch up to the spontaneity of the event.
Oh, really?
And I must say that the police behaved with comportment yesterday evening. And there was a detective's car, and then maybe later on a few patrol units, and later and later and later on in the procession, in the deep rain of the evening, there was eventually a contingent of foot patrol officers, men and women, who sort of like escorted from the street. And later on, we'll hear some of the details about that. But it was a serene and wet experience that began with drizzle and ended with a thunderstorm. Well, not thunder, but certainly with a deluge. And the thing that struck me being out there, reporting occasionally from the field to the studio, Ken, is the enthusiasm and majesty of the young Japanese American and the recently visited Japanese women, one of whom had been excluded from her home in the Fukushima district. And I was just, very much touched by the ubiquity of a world problem in that tiny little space in Manhattan yesterday evening.
It, There's a video of it online, and I watched the beginning of it. And in fact, I created a web page this morning so that people can go to my website and connect to the audio of it, the video of it, the music from it. And so watching the video, and the video starts before the march actually started. So you can sort of see people gathering and
sort of like the opening scenes from Ultima.
Yeah. and the mic checks and things. And then when they're chanting, and you can hear WBAI, and in fact, as they leave Tompkins Square Park, you hear, put on 99.5, put on 99.5. And when I put the chanting up behind the music, you can hear somebody, probably Peter, going, "That's us! That's us!" And then everybody starts cheering some more, and so you could see the kind of energy that everybody had right from the very, very beginning. And it made it fun to watch, even though I couldn't be there because, of course, I was in the studio. It was a nice little vicarious joining in.
Well, I want to congratulate you once more on a fine project, useful experiment in the potential of broadcast radio. Because we could walk around and we didn't have to get and lose and get the signal, because everybody's now been trained to put encryption on their Wi-Fi, even though they're irradiating me with it, you see. And I still maintain that broadcast radio has unique, untraceable organizing potential.
And also, like, the rain actually points out another aspect of this that I hadn't thought of, which is even if you can't go to the rally, you can still go to the rally via your radio.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to ever postpone anything, because you'll still have marchers. They're always going to be hardcore, because those would be the most wonderful of your activists anyway. Mm-hmm. But the march can go on because everything else is at the radio station.
You know, I'm wondering if anybody listening to Earthwatch tonight was listening to Echologic last night. And if they were, and you have a contribution to make to this discussion, then give us a call at 212-209-2900, WBAI, 212-209-2900. And so, Ken, what is your epiphany about the entire evening?
I was so high energy when I came home that I just went and played the full versions of every song that we put on the air and the ones that we never got to. I got a call from Alice Slater, who was one of the...
Oh, my goodness, I have accidentally lost Ken. Ken, would you please call us back on the on-air line so that I might reconnect us? It might be faster than my calling you from the studio. This is WBAI in New York, live radio, free-form radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. My name is Robert Knight, and the program is Earthwatch, and... let me see now. Okay. Hello, is this you, Ken? Okay, stand by. Okay, hello, is this you, Ken?
Hi. I tried to call before, but they hung me up.
Okay. Would you hold on for just a moment, please?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I'm new to this medium. Stand by, and hello. Ken, is this you?
Yes.
Okay, Ken, I'll let you complete your thoughts first, and then we'll take some listener calls.
I'm not sure how far I was going. I was talking about how the energy of the evening continued, long after I got home, And Alice Slater, who was one of the guests talking about the connection between nuclear power and weapons, she had the same feeling. She just said the music was in her head, and it couldn't leave. It didn't leave. And I think that's why I was able to code the web page so quickly, because I wanted everybody to get that music again. Yuko and I chose the music, mostly Yuko, and very appropriate about people power and about nuclear power and all different aspects, different ways of saying it. We made sure there are several different styles of music because we wanted it to be like an everyman sort of thing.
Well, radio at its best.
Yes.
And we've got a couple calls. Can you stay for a minute?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, stand by. And you are on the air.
Yes, okay. So what you're saying is while we Raging Grannies sang in the studio, the people in the street were singing with us?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, my God.
Hi, Judith.
A miracle. Thank you.
You know, I in one of my reports referred to being out there with a passel of protesters and a rage of grannies.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll get off the phone and listen. Have a good night, and thank you so much for making it happen.
Yeah, well, no, you're the artist here. Thank you.
Oh, bye-bye, my dears. I love you.
All right, bye. This is Earthwatch, and you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air now.
Great. Yeah, within the garden of...
I am?
Hello, in Agata DeVita, you're on the air.
Yeah, okay. So, everybody thought that somebody was somebody, but all of a sudden they thought that everybody was nobody. And I like to say that it is exactly what you said in the Agata DeVita.
Dun, dun, da, 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 da. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Ken, you've got the last word.
Somebody else has the last word.
Ken, bring it home.
Did you lose me again?
Yeah, bring it home, Ken.
I just want to thank everybody for making it happen. I want to thank the listeners of BAI to give me energy to do Ecologic every other week. And especially Yuko and Minori for their organizational abilities to show, because I understand there's a station in Berkeley that wants to do something like this from out there. I think we may hear more of this, and I think radio will show new life. And thank you, Robert, for your help, because it wouldn't have been nearly as good without you having been there.
Well, I was just there when it happened. And I was not alone. Out there in the field, I must give credit for the courageous duty and inventive technology of Grayson Challenger, yes, of the Operations Department, and my own associate, Thiago Brozo, from 5 O'Clock Shadow.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Ken, nice work, and it's only a beginning. Talk to you soon.
It's only a beginning. It's a wonderful beginning.
All righty.
And you were there.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, here, let's see, unredacted, blemishes and all, because this was a stream of fact, actuality from the field, just a tiny little couple of minutes of flavor of what it sounded like from out there, drenched in the streets with this great experiment. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Earthwatch, and this is what Ecologic sounded like last night at one of the particular many great moments.
Robert Knight, are you still with us from the march?
Yes, Ken, it has taken many interesting turns, literally interesting turns, since we last spoke 20 minutes ago, as the march moved west of Broadway near Astor Place, the number of police cars following it at least trebled, possibly quadrupled. The black detective's car has now been joined by two or three more blue and white units. And as the march went towards Broadway,
the police, through their loudspeakers, instructed the dozens of people marching against nukes and for Japan and for energy safety, instructed them to get back on the sidewalk, stay on the sidewalk. Following that, a very interesting series of tactics occurred in which the sidewalk march began turning counter to traffic as they stayed on the sidewalk, but it created a very perplexing dilemma for the police, who were then forced to attempt to go against heavy traffic, traveling north on Broadway, traveling east on 9th Street, and then going around the block again, most of the time against the arrows of one-way traffic. At this point, there is less singing than there is occasional eruptions of no nukes and slogans to that effect. The march right now is being surrounded or accompanied by approximately a dozen police walking in the street alongside with the protesters on the sidewalk. But still, it is a quiet, peaceful moment. And among those who are here with us today is an actual mother from the Fukushima province. Can you tell me the lady's name?
Her name is Takako Shishido. She's standing next to her. She just arrived to New York this morning from Japan, and she's an evacuee from Fukushima now she lives in Hokkaido with her family.
Ask her what she can do to get her life back, her home, and...
そうですね、多分たくさんの国の助けが必要になってくると思います。いろんな、力を集めないと福島はもう元には戻せないし、戻すにはたくさん力が時間がかかると思います。
We need a lot of power and efforts from the worldin order for our people in Fukushima to get back to our life, we need efforts from the world.
I understand that you're also involved in the upcoming environmental summit?
Yes, Rio Plus 20.
Those sounds are the sounds of yellow balloons with radioactivity symbols and the slogan "No Nukes" upon them. They were used as a gathering point inside Tompkins Square Park, the scene of the police raid 88 and the draft riots of 1863. And from there we marched and have been going all around Lower Manhattan. We are presently on University Avenue heading north at 11th Street. And so far, it is a quiet night. There is the occasional singing, the chanting and protests. And here we stand under a light drizzle, but spirits are high, if not dry. And from Lower Manhattan, heading towards Union Square, with Thiago Brozo and Grayson Challenger, I'm Robert Knight.
Officer, I know where we're going!
And this is Earthwatch. A little taste of some of the innovative radio that took place last night on Ecologic with Ken Gale and the entire crew. I'm Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. And the phone number is 212-209-2900, and you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Oh, wow. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, so what? Turn your radio down. Talk to me.
Yes.
What do you think of all this?
What do I think about what?
What do you think about our little experiment?
Yeah, well, the Earth rotates backwards among the sun, and Venus is going to be lucky. Well, I think that whole thing is, like, so sebas. It's so, like, karmatic, and, wow, holy mackerel, I'm so happy to talk to you.
Well, it was good. It was.
You know what? We could talk.
It was good for me too.
Yes. And what do you think?
Well, I think
that the moon is. Yeah, it is.
I think we're at a magic moment.
Yes, and you know what? That's okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, and We appreciate all of your thoughts, and we'll continue. This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at stream.wbai.org. And I should note, if you'd like to hear the Ecologic program, it is archived at the website archive.wbai.org. Go and search for the date of June 12th, 2012. And go to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You're on the air. Whoop. What happened? Okay. As I said, this is Earthwatch. The archive is at archive.wbai.org. And I guess maybe that last caller might have gotten cold feet, as I certainly did, walking in that drenching rain last night. It completely demolished my Armani WBAI news blazer and my magic electrical wristwatch, but it was well worth the effort. And do stay tuned. This is Earthwatch. We'll have more for you as the evening progresses. And this is a Japanese-originated song, Rokaisho, about the operation of nuclear power in Japan.
Yeah. Picture this. Wake up the nations, we need ventilation of tainted information gathered in the bottom of a nuclear reactor. Nothing to clear about the cloudy factors, shady tactics. Army of paid actors, hard dry like cactus. Black rain back in the day, pool disastrous. We're putting our children at risk. Dating with an asterisk, call up the activists. Greetings, sun salutation. We give praise to the Almighty. Knowledge from the ancient offering. Though some seek shelter in artificial stations, genetic mutations. The installation of a new plant. But this plant is no ordinary plant. No, she wouldn't yield a flower or shed green leaves. Instead, she showers daily in a deadly breeze. Spread like the zodiac sign after Gemini. The everyday workday folk like you and I. Once believed in this promise of a garden. Boy, Adam, girl, Eve of destruction. Technology, system malfunction. The angle is deep and the wheels losing traction. Who dare say they care about our safety? As long as the food on their dinner plate tasty. No time for supper, as we shall suffer the consequence. Might as well enjoy the last cup of tea if you prefer the taster. Metal in your mouth, white blood cells on the fence. People call me sin, preemptive strike back across the cross. I guess it all depends which side you're on. Whether you feel locked up or free to move on, confess it. All depends which ride you're on. Whether you see pitch black or a light to keep on. And come on, come on, come on, yeah. Whether you see pitch black or a light to keep on, and come on, shake up the nations. We need ventilation of tainted information gathered in the bottom of a nuclear reactor. Nothing new or clear about the cloudy factors, shady tactics. Army of paid actors, hard dry like cactus. Black rain back in the day, pool disastrous. We're putting our children at risk. Data with an asterisk, power to the activists. Yeah, yeah, data with an asterisk, power to the active, 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 active. Alpha, beta, gamma rays, any way you like it. Now we're living in Omega Day. Seem like we're trapped in a sci-fi anime. Clean room, byproducts, contaminant. Lab workers with laminates, cats wrecked. Too late to reach for the medicine cabinet. The only fusion happening around mass confusion. Need for deep contemplation. Cut through the noise, mad concentration. Camps built on purpose of tax evasion. Politicians swayed by their shifty cranium. Wicked wet dreams, pure forms of uranium. Multiple platinum enriched plutonium. In propaganda from a sponsored podium. Uno hit like one, the sound of thunder. Another faux pas, irreversible blunder. Thermal recording in a pressurized chamber. Tweak the heat meter.
it, we'll see through you later. Bonds get smarter while soldiers get dumber. Ain't drive a Hummer now, winter hot like summer, summer cold like winter now. Who's in the winner circle? Hoops broken, ice caps getting thinner. How do we stop a force so damn powerful? Have to counter with the bigger voice, let a mouthful of noise begin. Let them bad boys know they can't play with the toys no more. Before they blow up in the face, strapping the flying everywhere in slow-mo. Ricochet off the wall and sting in reality. Don't let the mothers tally up the fatalities. Judgment soon come beyond the duality. Judgment soon come beyond the duality. So why let the silence kill a true utterance? Why make the homeless scrub up your gutter? And who let the science build the righteous teachers? We let defiance let the room full of creatures. Treasures are stolen then dumped in the ocean. Oh, what we do to a motherland caution? Murder she wrote in her will in a eulogy. Offsprings cremate her to create energy. Smoke rise, holy figures burn in effigy. Solar eclipse on the night of an apogee. Earth spin around the doomsday clock. Missing around now, the whole building block is hot. Slagging rocks on the fly, walking on a tight cable, and gambling on top of the periodic table. May fate bring together minds that are able to express from an independent label to rep a hard knock cradle. It's time to rock a show. Let the name ring worldwide, rock a show. What you don't need for show, yet another Chernobyl. Leaks like thought, but till then remain hopeful. My people, you wanna see the whole plot. Like a constellation, you connect the dots. See the outline of a master plan at hand. Train rhyme named Desire, headed for disaster. Charge like plasma, shatter like plaster. Cause we wanna get from point A to B faster. Set your soul on an auction bid. Better yet, set yourself a vibration, kid. This theater has no spin, like a turbine. No script set for this year by the genuine population. The path we must take for a major alteration. Extreme consumption to wise moderation. Enough of the debating. Get up in the morning just to see what we're facing. Enough of the debasing. Get up in the morning just to see what we're facing. And that's real, real as it gets. Uh-oh, wake up the nations, we need ventilation. Obtained information, gathered in the bottom of a nuclear reactor. Nothing new or clear about the cloudy factors. Shady tactics, army of paid actors. Hard dry like cactus, black rain back in the day proved disastrous. We're putting our children at risk. Dating with an asterisk, power to the activists. We're putting our future at risk. Dating with an asterisk. Power to the activists.
Rokaisho on Earthwatch. Japanese nuclear song. This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight. You're tuned to 99.5 or stream.wbai.org. And you're on the air. 212-209-2900 is our number. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Just started listening, and, you know, I'm the progressive strategist, you know, and I want to send my love to all my brothers and progressive brothers and sisters out there. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it sounds good. I just turned the radio on. But like I said, I'm the progressive strategist, and, like, I give, like, you know, I kind of, like, figure things out. You know, after living so long, I kind of figured out things that things were doing right and things were doing wrong. You know,
well,
I think it's important to look at it, at ourselves, you know, to straighten out our path, you know, because progressives basically got the truth. You know, they got the basic truth, but at the same time, we make a lot of mistakes, and we shoot ourselves in the foot a lot.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that.
Well, can I just make one comment, Mark?
Sure.
Well, the music you were playing, you know, music that has harmony and melody is the aspects that bring aesthetics to music and really inspire people and encourage people. I think you should be using that type of music. You know, I mean, chants are good, you know, when you're in marches and stuff and you don't have instruments and stuff, But when you're on a radio, I think, you know, you should use, like, you know, I mean, we have a large canon of music, the American canon of pop music is the thing that inspires the world, you know, and it seems like people in our country don't even use it.
Well, it's one of them. Yeah, well, thank you. That's a very useful insight, and I think you're going to like this. Thank you for calling.
Thanks a lot, Robert. Bye-bye.
This is based on my recollection of the bone-drenching rain at a brilliant event last night with Japanese people and people of all stripes and hues marching for safe and sane energy in commemoration of Fukushima.
Some of them were dreamers, some of them were fools, who were making plans and thinking of the future. With the energy of the innocent, they were gathering the tools they would need to make their journey back to nature. While the sand slipped through the opening and their hands reached for the golden ring, with their hearts they turned to each other's hearts. Some of them need pleasure, some of them need pain, and for some of them it was only the moment that mattered. And on the brave and crazy wings of youth, they went flying around in the rain, and their feathers weren't so fine. Let's go.
when the light that's lost within us, by and by that's lost within us, reaches
by
the sky.
Yeah. Before the deluge, Jackson Browne. This is Earth Watch. I'm Robert Knight. You're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 megahertz FM, freeform radio. And streaming at WBAI.org. And various exigencies required our attention to other matters. And but now we have the chance to reach for the sky. We are now joined live by Steve Cates of the Skywatch Report, a long-term feature of Earthwatch. And Steve is himself an astronomer and someone who saw something very spectacular over the past few days. And I'm just going to begin by acknowledging the lunar eclipse and the transit of Venus before the face of the sun, or as I call it, as did the Supremes, when the love light starts shining. Welcome back, Steve.
Good morning, Robert. It's always a privilege and honor to be here on WBAI talking about things otherworldly. And there's so many things to talk about, as you referenced in the nice introduction there. Interesting things happening in the sky. I'd like to take the most recent one. And I hope that some of the listeners in the listening area, that is, may have been in other locations around the country to see that rare transit of Venus, a most amazing sight. Going back in time, I witnessed my first transit of Venus June the 8th of 2004 when I journeyed with friends to Embry-Riddle University in Daytona Beach, Florida, to put a program on for those folks down there, a most amazing event. Seeing for the first time in my life this inky black object just nestled on the right side of the sun as the sun rose that morning. And it's hard to believe that it's 8 years later. And what makes these events, of course, so rare for all of us out there, that the mainstream media have been, you know, giving directions on how to see this event, or at least making it a note in our daily vocabulary. It's something that really was pretty interesting. I returned to Florida once again, Robert, for this particular transit of Venus, as many of us know, in the history books now. June the 5th, 2011, I returned to the same location, but unfortunately the weather conditions there were not as good. I did get to see it, though, but maybe for about 2 minutes, to be very honest with the listening audience, and there's no other way. But seeing the ingress of this amazing planet, the goddess of love and beauty, as we've described here on WBAI on Earthwatch with your program here, with Skywatch, with my segment. It was still amazing to see, just seeing the inky black object, very non-sunspot-like, of course, making the sunspots even look bright in comparison to that dark jet black, almost like a miniature black hole, if one can describe that in the mind's eye. But Robert, what's interesting about the event is obviously the rarity of this particular event. And it's so very interesting when you study about transits of Venus, that if we think back to the very first time that humans, at least that we know of in modern history, Jeremiah Horrocks around the year 1639, is credited with actually observing one of the first visual transits. I'm sure he's not the first human on the earth to ever see this, but in predictability times, this indeed a very unusual event. It happens so infrequently that that's why it's just an amazing object. And none of us today, at least unless medical science changes its ways, will be able to see the next one, which is scheduled, get a little of this, for December the 11th of the year 2117. But I also found out some very interesting stories to pass on to the listeners here on Earthwatch on WBAI. A French observer named Legend Teal did not have such great luck. He tried to observe two transits of the planet Venus, simply left his home in France, went away for a period of some 11 years. When we have this 8 year or so repetitiveness of these transits, he traveled, of course, to an area where he thought he could observe this particular event. And lo and behold, on the same day that he, with his very crude mathematics of the time, but still fairly accurate, he was clouded out in his first opportunity to travel halfway around the world to see the event. And then still staying away from home, he figured if he missed this one, he might as well stay halfway around the world to see the second event, somewhere in the Philippines. And unfortunately, once again, his ship, apparently, he'd never made it because he was at sea with the rolling waves and the motion of the ocean. He never got to see it. But what's interesting about this, it's comical, but yet tragic in the same way. Apparently, being away so long, his wife divorced him. He, of course, lost his estate and, of course, missed one of the most amazing events in the world, seeing something we call the transit of Venus. But I imagine today, Robert, like many of us, as soon as I got that glimpse of the inky black Venus on the surface of the disk of the sun, I went, like many of us, to the modern tool, the Internet, and watched it on the SLU.org cameras. Of course, they had an entire 6 to 8 hour program watching this and passing and handing the torch on to various observatories around the world. But that was amazing in itself because on my small iPad, I could watch like the rest of us could on the Internet, pretty much the same thing that we could not see there in Florida or from anybody, or like I understand in your region, the New York City area, I think we were pretty much under a heavy cloud deck. But folks, amazing things are happening. A lot of science has actually learned about this particular event, the transit of Venus. And one thing that I find phenomenal, to give credit to the great technology of the day, there are observers out there that are claiming before the transit and after the transit, they were actually imaging the planet Venus in moderate telescopes with CCD cameras carefully placed away from the disk of the sun. And get a look at this. Only about a degree or so away on either side of the sun, which is incredible. And what they were seeing was even more incredible. They were seeing something we call the arc of Venus. And like many folks, and I hope the listeners of the show had an opportunity in the last month to watch Venus quickly cascade from that high position in the sky, moving ever so closer to the sun, to the horizon, what we call inferior conjunction. And here in Phoenix, like many observers, we watched it in the small telescope, and we saw a much larger Venus as it gets closer to the Earth. And if you want to talk about some astronomical trivia, many folks think that the planet Mars is the closest planet, other than, let's say, the natural satellite, the Moon, to the Earth. And we find out from the almanac very simply that Venus comes within some 25 to 26 million miles of the Earth. It does so, of course, at these times when it moves into inferior conjunction. So simply, if you got to see it, you saw this beautiful object, really small, but much larger than normal for Venus, is a very thin, waxing or waning crescent moon. But these observers that I'm talking about, Robert, actually imaged this planet, Venus, before the transit, by a degree or so from the sun, seeing a complete arc of light. And many observers are now confirming the hellacious atmosphere, of course, that Venus has. And simply what it must be doing, according to the physics of the whole thing, is that particles, aerosols, in the Venusian atmosphere are literally backscattering light as this object, planet Venus, got very close to the sun. And all of this, of course, is safely to view on many of the Internet sites that are out there from spaceweather.com and so many of the other regular sources that we quote here on this particular program. But Robert, I wanted to also mention something I found interesting. Going back in time to the date of Sunday, May the 20th, we had here in Arizona a most amazing eclipse expedition. We took our Dr. Sky team up to the southern rim of the Grand Canyon with about 25 people, not in one car, I assure you, or one SUV, but a team of people to watch this eclipse and record it. And I'm proud to announce that if the listeners of the show just simply go to YouTube and just simply Google Dr. Sky Annular Eclipse 2012, you'll get to see what cameraman Mike O'Connor, in my opinion, does so well. And that is capture the moment. After a brief introduction, myself, of course, describing the event, we have the, I think, important and very appropriate music, Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire, literally seeing the Ring of Fire in the sky, and not 100%, because we were about 50 miles south of where that line, we call that maximum line of the annular eclipse, was. But nonetheless, Robert, a really phenomenal event. These eclipses, of course, are so amazing. And if the listeners of our show this morning have never seen an eclipse, get set, ladies and gentlemen, for somewhere in the United States, and that is over a large swath of land and real estate, the date of August the 21st of 2017, we get to see an amazing event during those daylight hours as the totality of an eclipse comes close to the United States. one that's not that far off. I was thinking a long time ago when we started this program about 25 years ago that the year 2017 seemed literally out of this world, but obviously doing the math, it's just around the corner. But we're going to see an amazing event that I can't believe I'm describing in such detail because it's still a bit away, but it's never too early to talk about and preparing for total eclipses of the sun. It starts off as it moves across the coast of Oregon, tracing this dark line, the umbral path, that tiny shadow cone that touches the surface of the Earth, moving across the northwestern part of the United States, all the way across the beautiful state of Wyoming, literally downtown St. Louis, and it exits as it moves across, say, in Charleston, South Carolina, on the afternoon of August the 21st of 2017. So I mention it now because for all of us who were clouded out for the transit, or maybe never did get to see the partial eclipse of the moon earlier this month, or any of these amazing events, folks, I know it is without a doubt, take it from myself if you can, having seen about three or four of these eclipses, many friends of mine have seen many more. You have to travel to see them. But it's interesting to note, people ask me this question, how often, or how infrequent, I think is a better way to present it, would it be for an observer to stand in one single place on the Earth, any particular place? What's the frequency of total eclipses that happen in that particular place if you roll the dice? And the interesting answer is it's an amazing number, Robert. Some 575 years is the actual interval if you just stayed in one particular place and rolled the dice. The poles of the Earth, less frequent, of course, but areas like New York City, areas like Phoenix, and other places, thus the infrequent nature of these total eclipses of the sun, something to watch. And I thought I'd end off with a traditional sky watch here, just describing what's happening. The moon was at its last quarter on the 11th. It continues to wane, I should say, as it moves in toward the brilliance of the sun once again. The moon is new on the 19th. So sky watchers looking in the morning sky will continue to see, if you haven't already, a successive thinner and thinner crescent each morning until we reach the 19th. That summer solstice, the literal standing still of the sun, simply from the almanac, is 7.09 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 20th. Hard to believe that half of the year is just about over, but the moon naturally waxes, a beautiful sight in the sky. You can start to see that as early as the evening of the 20th, a new thin sliver of moonlight, literally in the northwestern part of the sky. And then on to the first quarter on the 26th of June. But Robert, unfortunately, not too many amazing planets to see right after sunset. Mars continues to move toward the glare of the sun, still in the constellation of Leo, moving to the left, fading away from us and in its brilliance. And probably, but still a wonderful object to see, is still high up into the southeastern sky at sunset, the beauty of the planet Saturn. Amazing object, Robert, as always, we like to describe it on this show as the original ringed world. And there's so many of these ring worlds now with the exoplanets discovered. And one closing thought, one of the great benefits, kind of on a macro scale, of the Venus transit is that is the technique, by and large, that astronomers are detecting exoplanets, and that is transits. Like Venus, if we think of it in our mind's eye, the black, inky, circular object, the planet, moving across the disk of the sun. And you imagine telescopes imaging stars and noticing a difference in the light fluctuations ever so slightly. And what we think we know today is literally probably well over 500-600 of these exoplanets. Very few discovered in that habitable zone, that Goldilocks region, where we know life as we know it here on the Earth does indeed abound. So much to talk about, so many wonderful things to see in the sky. And don't forget, as the moon encroaches, that is, to its new phase, the dark of the moon, as I like to say, a great time for city dwellers to get away from the lights of New York or any of the other cities around the country and look to the south, make it a habit, starting around this time, just as we approach 1 a.m. or a little after. Look into that southern sky in the darkest regions you can, and you're staring right into the central core of the Milky Way, some 27,000 light years away. Some city dwellers never get to see it, sadly, but Robert, with a little effort, anything's possible, right?
Well, thank you so much. You know, we have been hypnotized by the brilliance of Venus as it approached its most recent inferior conjunction, in which it subtended, I would say approximately, Steve, about the area of a thumbnail compared to the height of a human body relative to the diameter of the sun.
And, absolutely, a good analogy.
And a beautiful thing it was, both in its brilliance and in its darkness, which might
and the good thing is
hold
that
a lesson
it will
for us.
Once again, which is phenomenal. And folks, check out drscribe.com. We're going to do a whole new update, but RSS feeds in there and lots of new information. Thank you so much.
Well, once again, thanks for your astronomical improvisation. A treat as ever.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me on your program.
This is Earthwatch, and what else could I play but this?
It's a burning thing, and it makes us fiery. Bound by wild desire, I fell into your ring of fire.
This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. Our phone number is 212-209-2900. And we're also streaming at WBAI.org.
and rust before I took you up there again. And why could I not die then? Behind the curtains of your head, why could I not die then? Since it doesn't really matter.
Magic sound of the fifth dimension under the composition and conduction of the great composer Jimmy Webb, the Magic Garden Suite, and this is Earthwatch. Phone number here is area code 212-209-2900 in anticipation of any concluding thoughts you might have. And we return now to the suggestion of our astrogator, Steve Cates, about that amazing transit of Venus, the visit of love.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours beat. I fell for you like a child. But the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Who else? Mr. Cash at Montroy. This is Earthwatch on WBAI New York. A couple of closing phone calls at 212-209-2900. You're on the air.
I wanted to say that there was a rainbow last Thursday at about 6:50 p.m. in the eastern sky.
You know, you're absolutely right, and we may have seen the same one because it was on Thursday, approximately 7 p.m. ish. that I had the exquisite pleasure of leaving the studios of WBAI after 5 o'clock shadow and took a water taxi to Red Hook, Brooklyn for an event hosted and produced by Randy Credico with many dignitaries on behalf of the Stop, Stop and Frisk movement. But on the way, looking north on the East River, as what I saw from this region of Lower Manhattan was half a rainbow arcing up and bending towards the east.
Yeah. Well, I was very lucky. I was across the street from a one-story building, and everybody was looking east. And I looked east also, and I saw the rainbow before it was covered over by clouds. That was the first time I saw a rainbow.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, here's the ironic upshot that when we arrived at the destination for the great event at Rocky Sullivan's, the new one in Red Hook, it ended up over the IKEA store. but it seemed appropriate because I figured there was a pot of gold inside.
Well, I never saw a rainbow before in New York City. And I thought they would be much wider.
What an unlikely conjunction that opportune and transient moment brought you here. And I saw it too. And now everybody else knows it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
This is Earthwatch.
Oh, what peace I find here with your hand pressing close to mine. So peaceful and calm inside, like the sea at the ebb of tide. And without saying one single word, the very depths of your soul can be heard. P is for the privilege of loving and the privilege of being loved. E is for the ease it gives the soul and the mind. A is for the answers in your search to find yourself. C is the calm you feel if you like what you find. E is everlasting. Let this love never cease.
And you are listening to Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. Thank you for the peace and enlightenment that you bring, and especially through your support of this radio station, WBAI. Peace and Justice Radio. 99.5, WBAI.org. That's it for this week's edition of Earthwatch, a freeform radio program. Bob Fass will be on midnight tomorrow, and Jim Freund will be coming up right after this with Hour of the Wolf. Be well and stay bright. I'm Robert Knight. You can email rknight at wbai.org if you are so inclined.
Bye. I don't brag or boast. Click my glass and say a toast. About my love for you. How it runs so deep and true. And yet it's so. Cause don't you know?
Earthwatch was brought to you live, with portions on recording. Well, we are apparently waiting. I thought I would have this dramatic segue here. We're apparently waiting for the computer in here. Ah, there it goes. Howl, baby, howl. Oh dear, this computer needs a serious reboot. Don't we all? Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, well, those terms, enchantment, fantasy, science fiction, and imagination, another way to express them would be Ray Bradbury. Stay tuned. Thank you. as mentioned, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. If you tuned in last week was even more freeform than this show is wont to be sometimes. I had an amazing writer, Felix Gilman, and his presence was facilitated by James Gates, who is a publicist and PR director of the Science Fiction Writers of America, and I had been working for her, more or less, at Book Expo of America, and we were co-working during the Nebula Awards earlier, about, is it already 3 weeks ago? I guess it is. And we were just going to chat and talk about science fiction, but it was announced earlier last Wednesday that Ray Bradbury had passed away. And which is, by the way, not the only sad passing in science fiction this week. Jim Young, who was a guest on this program several times, although I guess the last time was about 9 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago. Jim Young was a center of Minneapolis fandom, but he was also a good writer. He wrote a couple of short stories and an amazing novel, the name of which I'm blanking on, but you'll never think of hammerhead sharks in the same way. Before the end of the show, I'll tell you the name of the novel. Jim Young, who's Bradbury was 91. Jim lived up to his name. He was young. He's about my age, late 50s. And he had a brain tumor. It was announced last week, and he died yesterday. And is somebody who will also be missed. But Bradbury's passing is seismic worldwide. Jim Young was a great loss to the people who knew him. Bradbury was a huge loss to people who haven't even heard of him, necessarily. Although I think there are very, very few people who hadn't heard of him. And so last week, James and Felix and I just sort of extemporaneized? Ooh, there's a new word that should never be repeated ever again. We spoke extemporaneously. We did freeform radio, starting with Bradbury and reading a piece of his and two official obits. James read two official obits, one from the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America and the other from the president of the United States. I dare say it's the first time that a science fiction writer was given an obit by the president of the U.S. And, of course, by the way, the Republicans had to counter, I think it was McCain, saying, well, we like Bradbury, too. Bradbury was very much a universal speaker, and I think that was what people liked about him so much. He gave voice to some really deep, meaningful, wonderful things in so many ways. He was great as a first read when you are learning to appreciate more sophisticated fiction as a youngster. In those days, we didn't have the concept of young adult fiction. We had juveniles, and we had books that weren't juveniles. And I mentioned stories last week on the air that I'm going to repeat because I assume, or rather I can't assume, that we have all the same listeners. And some of these stories are very formative to me about my reading and appreciation of Bradbury. That my uncle has a lot to answer for, had a lot to answer for. He's long gone. He died when I was about, I guess about 14. But he did two things that were instrumental to my life, one of which was he got me reading science fiction, and number two was he introduced me to the sounds of WBAI. So as I said, he had a lot to answer for. And one of the first series of books that he gave me were short stories by Ray Bradbury. And that was furthered, only slightly mistakenly, by my parents, who gave me the books S is for Space and R is for Rocket, because the titles sounded like they were for young people, and they're not. They're short story collections, totally adult. And I read them, and I didn't necessarily comprehend them, but they made me want to reach. They made me want to learn more. I read and loved and fully appreciated Bradbury's signature work, Fahrenheit 451. But the thing that spoke to me the most were probably the Martian Chronicles, because of my age and the idea of adventure. Bradbury picked up right from where Edgar Rice Burroughs left off. And he wrote about his love of the John Carter stories and Edgar Rice Burroughs. And by the way, speaking of the Nebula Awards and the John Carter stories, Genevieve Valentine was here earlier tonight. She was a Nebula nominee for Best Novel earlier this year. And she finally recorded for us her first movie review. And we're going to try to place those in several places on WBAI. But you should also read her novel, Mechanique. And I mention that in relation to John Carter, because those who were listening when we were offering John Joseph Adams' Barsoom book, New Adventures of John Carter, she was here live on the air reading her John Carter short story, a variant on Edgar Rice Burroughs' Chessmen of Mars. It was a wonderful work that she did there. Anyway, trying to get back on track. Bradbury picked up pretty much where Burroughs left off, but with more poetry. Bradbury always had poetry in his writing. And this was both among his strongest and weakest assets. But he was one of the first writers in science fiction to carry science fiction from the pulp era to the prose era, where writing mattered. The idea that he had prose, that he wrote in a manner that gave you pause and said, you know, I like the feel of that sentence in my mind that ran so well over my mind's eye. He did that beautifully. And he also followed through the kinds of things that people like Robert Heinlein were doing with universes, shorts, and Asimov, short stories that would lead to larger works, which is what ends up becoming the Martian Chronicles. So the Martian Chronicles were among my first favorite thing. And as a result of the Martian Chronicles, and here's a story I told last week, I was always a bad student in school, always, never made it through. But one of the things that I really got enthusiasm up for in the fifth grade, and fifth and sixth grade is where I ended up in a lot of trouble for book reports. But this was the first of them. In the fifth grade, I wrote a book report on the Martian Chronicles. And the teacher basically didn't look at it. The teacher gave me an F.